This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The pandemic is easing, but the childcare workforce isn't coming back in Bloomington normal.
We've tried social media, word of mouth. I've been doing this for 19 years, and I've never experienced anything like this.
So childcare is getting really expensive if you can find a spot at all. There's also a shortage of truck drivers in central Illinois. Hear how to get into that biz and why veteran drivers are getting out. A political scientist weighs in on the method of drawing new district maps for the McLean County Board. And learn about the implications for Illinois of a new Supreme Court ruling on the sentencing of child offenders. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, celebrating 30 years as local hearing healthcare professionals. With a practice featuring five doctors of audiology, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient. They believe those personal partnerships are how people embrace hearing technology and keep hearing the most important sounds of their lives. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. Bloomington's new one-stop shop for city services is now open on the first floor of the Government Center. The hub opened today. Specially trained staff from multiple departments are available to assist residents with questions and payments. Mayor Mboka Mwilambwe says the new space won't just help residents.
If you're a developer, well, you can talk to folks from Public Works about some of your plans, but at the same time, you can also talk to someone from the legal department about some of the plans and you know, the legal implications of what you're trying to do.
The hub is open from 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. Illinois' pandemic-related moratorium on evictions will be phased out in August. Governor J.B. Pritzker also says the state is launching $1.5 billion housing assistance program to ease the transition. State Representative Delia Ramirez of Chicago says this program is meant to avert a massive housing crisis.
To all people who right now are trying to figure out, do I pay for my rent or do I buy my diabetes medication? We are asking you, inviting you to apply for the assistance we have available.
Most of the federal grant money will go to renters. $400 million of those dollars are planned for mortgage assistance in a separate program the state hasn't launched yet. Illinoisans are eligible for rental assistance if they're at least a month behind on rent and have experienced financial hardship from the pandemic. They can access up to 15 months' worth of rent for a maximum of $25,000. The money is paid directly to landlords. McLean County's COVID-19 hospitalizations, active caseload, and testing positivity rate are down. That comes as health officials report 70 new coronavirus cases over the weekend. There are 21 McLean County residents being treated for COVID complications. That's a 40% drop in hospitalizations since Friday. The active caseload dropped below 250, with 225 residents isolating at home. The testing positivity rate fell. It's now 2.5%. The Coronavirus Testing Center at the Interstate Center conducted fewer than 100 tests on Saturday for the first time since last June. Despite that drop, testing is still fairly robust in the county. More than 7,800 coronavirus tests were conducted in the county over the last week. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's Hear My Story series continues with local patients Larry and Judy Mays.
I really realized that I was having a lot of trouble hearing, and you miss out on a lot, especially with your grandkids.
Larry and Judy's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. Child care programs have fewer restrictions than they did last summer when COVID-19 was fresh and uncertain. Parents could still have a hard time finding somewhere to send their kids. Dana Vollmer reports COVID restrictions have eased, staffing challenges have not.
Illinois is heading toward a full reopening next month if COVID metrics remain on the right track. Parents are ready to drop kids back at daycare so they can get a break or because their work life is changing. Dana David is executive director of Milestones Early Learning Center in Bloomington. She says the problem is there's nowhere to send them.
There is large employers talking about having staff return this summer, so parents are preparing for that. And they can't find anything. I had a mom with three kids inquire about care and said she couldn't find a program that could take all three of her kids.
David says short staffing is the biggest factor. Milestones has a waiting list of more than 50 kids, and they're getting more calls by the day. But no new employees means no new kids. David says it's an industry-wide problem.
We post our jobs on Indeed along with every other program in town. We've tried social media, word of mouth. I've been doing this for 19 years and I've never experienced anything like this.
David says childcare is always tough work, but amid COVID, personal safety has become a big deterrent.
We aren't in a setting where it is easy to social distance. You know, babies need to be held and comforted and, you know, obviously under two, they cannot wear masks for safety issues. It did put people in a very nervous state of, oh, am I safe? Am I safe going home to my families after I've been here?
Another challenge is who qualifies. David says the state and Department of Children and Family Services are working on ways to allow more people to enter the profession, but it's not that easy.
We don't want to reduce requirements for people working in this field to just putting anyone in a classroom, but yet we need a workforce. Minimum wage going up is challenging. These costs are going to fall on parents.
Providers acknowledge childcare costs are high. They say there's no way around it. Tia Griffin is director of Katie's Kids in Bloomington. She says families are paying more than $600 a week for childcare, and that's with a discount. That's hard for families to afford. It's also not enough for care providers to pay higher wages.
I mean, we get paid nothing. Everybody makes minimum wage or just above. Even if, I mean, my assistant director has a master's degree and my high school student, who's 18, makes more money than her as a lifeguard. So that doesn't help.
Griffin says the low pay doesn't match the physical and mental strain of the job. She says people get paid more to do less tiring things.
There's no reason now for them to just go to Wendy's and make more money, you know, for an easier position. So that's really killing us. So I have employees working 10, 12-hour days, like, consistently for weeks on end.
Melissa Breeden runs early childhood education programs at the YWCA of McLean County. She says they recognize times are tough for daycare teachers and are trying to keep them afloat.
We've been able to offer them, like during the holiday season, we've been able to link them with utility assistance, grocery gift cards, special Christmas gifts for their children to kind of help alleviate some personal finance struggles. And we've been also able to link them with some mental health resources.
Breeden says the strain is higher as COVID changes things by the minute. She says the YWCA, like other child care providers, has had positive cases. That means everyone involved has to quarantine for 2 weeks. Breeden says that causes significant strain for families who rely on having child care.
We really are just doing the best we possibly can. We've, you know, increased our cost on sanitizer, gloves, you know, masks, all of that stuff. But we have had to let go of the fact that we do not have control over a pandemic. All we can control is that our staff are meeting those CDC regulations and so are the children.
The unreliability of care during the pandemic is especially troublesome for mothers. Elise Gould is with the left-leaning Economic Policy Institute. She says most people aren't working from home and can't take kids to the office with them.
Many women who have a hard time are the ones who have to physically go into work. And that's the vast majority of this economy. Even today, 80% of workers are actually going in physically to work. So they have no ability to take care of young kids.
Gould says women have borne the brunt of unemployment during the pandemic. That's largely because they take on disproportionate caregiving responsibilities. But she says this was a problem before COVID, too. She says mothers' labor force participation has been softening for decades. Gould says the cost-benefit analysis is hard to weigh.
It's a false choice that people are making, right? They don't really have a choice between being able to work in the labor market reliably and get the early care and education that they want for their kids, because it is simply out of reach. And it's not just for low-income families that it's out of reach. Many moderate, middle-income families struggle.
Gould says the burden is worse for Black and Latina women. She says she's hopeful those displaced from work due to the pandemic can rejoin the workforce soon.
I think that there will be many opportunities as it becomes safe to completely reopen and schools are open and child care centers are reliably open. I think there will be opportunities that will return to many people who have been sidelined in this economy.
But Gould says without policy change to better support families and child care providers, a return to normal will remain out of reach for many. I'm Dina Vollmer.
This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. McLean County will create a bipartisan commission to draft three proposed county board maps. Illinois Wesleyan University political science professor Greg Shaw tells Eric Stock he considers that a positive step toward creating more fair and competitive board races for the next decade. Shaw notes County Board Chair John McIntyre and Board Member Elizabeth Johnston represent the only district that elected one Republican and one Democrat.
It's pretty obvious to, I think, anyone who looks at the county board map that 9 of the 10 districts are clearly partisan creatures, right? All but number 5 are represented by either 2 Democrats or 2 Republicans. So let's just acknowledge that the way the map is drawn has been pretty partisan as it is. And that's not saying that it's necessarily unfair, but let's just face that as a background reality. Let's keep that in mind. There are some other issues that I think could become statutory conflicts. So state law says that you're not supposed to split precincts, but in fact, that happens on our county board. And so there's a problem about that, because that's a sign that there's intentionality about drawing lines that potentially disenfranchise communities of interest. Another statutory issue that I think should be taken seriously is that state law says that you should go to great lengths to not split municipalities.
Or how common is that practice in local governments? We know it happens at the state level.
So I'm not sure with regard to breaking municipalities or breaking precincts. I don't know how common that is. That's really, I don't know. But certainly there's one more consideration, and it has to do with compactness. The state law says that districts are supposed to be compact. And this is usually to make sure that people who share a common interest, whether that's economic class or race or whatever that may be, that they don't get intentionally split or cracked, as the saying goes. So critics will scoff at this and say, well, compactness is in the eye of the beholder and that there's no sort of test for this. This is where citizens can come in and say, look, I can see a non-compact district when I can identify one when I see it. And so I think we should take that seriously.
As you had alluded to, that there should be an effort toward creating more in-play districts, if you will, following compact communities would naturally create that?
Yes. So yeah, the evidence is yes. So the opposite is quite on display as we see partisan gerrymanders, you know, run amok across this country. I'm thinking particularly at the congressional level. You know, state legislatures, generally their rule is to protect incumbents, especially incumbents of their own party if they're in the majority. And so we know that less gerrymandered districts will be more, on the whole, will be more competitive. And I think from a small d democratic point of view, that's a great thing, because it gives folks a viable pair of choices, right? Or maybe more than two choices. And so I love that principle of creating more competitive districts. It should not be a foregone conclusion. Routinely, representatives should not run unopposed. I mean, we should naturally create some competition so that citizens have a choice. I mean, that's what fundamentally, you know, democracy is supposed to involve.
And local Republicans have said the Democrats in Springfield have been gerrymandering the maps for years to help themselves and to hurt Republicans. And this is a Republican-leaning county, especially outside of Bloomington-Normal. So is that a fair argument to make?
I think it is a fair argument to make. I think, you know, two can play this game. And I want to point back to the growing number of states that have resorted to some sort of some other independent commission to draw maps. Because when you put folks in a room and close the door and give them precinct level voting data, you know, it's not hard to generate exactly the kind of electoral outcome you want. And I think there's evidence that both parties do this whenever they get the chance. The district that I'm sitting in, the 13th congressional district, right, was drawn to be a Democratic district. It hasn't worked out that way. You know, Rodney Davis, you know, keeps winning, but I think that's deeply problematic, and it disempowers voters.
That was Illinois Wesleyan University political science professor Greg Shaw with Eric Stock. Shaw says the public comment sessions the county held at the start of the process likely weren't useful since there were no proposed maps to consider. The county plans to make 3 proposed maps available for public viewing before the county board approves a new map in mid-July. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This next story was reported by Edith Brady Lunny. A recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling considered a disappointing setback for efforts to spare young offenders from a life in prison without parole may not have much impact in Illinois. The newly formed conservative majority of the Supreme Court voted 6-3 last month to deny Brett Jones of Mississippi a chance to reduce the life term he began serving after he fatally stabbed his grandfather. Jones was 15 at the time. Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote the majority opinion that a judge is not required to consider whether a young offender is permanently incorrigible as part of the sentencing process. The court rules the fact Mississippi law gives a judge the option of life or a lesser term in prison is sufficient to protect the defendant's constitutional rights. Elizabeth Clark is the founder of the Illinois Juvenile Justice Initiative. Clark says the opinion is lacking, both in its narrow view of mandatory protections and its potential to keep young adults from returning to society.
It's profoundly disappointing. There's no question about it. The court not only backs away from its earlier decisions about considering not just youth, but considering the distinctive attributes of youth.
Clark says the lack of recognition in the Jones ruling of standards for juveniles accused of crimes in other countries is another disappointing flaw.
With very few exceptions, you should find every child capable of redemption, of rehabilitation.
She says incarceration and life sentences for juveniles are banned in many countries.
We're one of the few countries in the world that sentences children to die in prison, that has laws allowing children to be sentenced to life without parole. International human rights says that children under 18 must be tried in a juvenile court and given a juvenile sentence, not an adult sentence. And this is such a shocking deprivation of human rights for children.
Clark and other advocates have pushed for reforms in Illinois law that include specific sentencing considerations for young adults.
I think the Illinois legislators and judges are moving beyond this. I am hopeful that they will continue to on the path that they've been on, to recognize that children are different and that they deserve a different standard.
Scott Main is a staff attorney with the Illinois Juvenile Defender Resource Center, a division of the Office of State Appellate Defender. Main says the ruling leaves in place the process laid out in 2 previous cases to determine a youth's potential for rehabilitation. Main says future state court decisions will determine the ruling's impact in Illinois, and it's too early to say what Illinois courts will do. In general, Maine says the Illinois Supreme Court has been out in front of the U.S. Supreme Court in putting measures in place to require judges to evaluate each offender individually. The state's high court ordered the retroactive review of life sentences before the U.S. Supreme Court issued its mandate for about 1,500 cases nationwide. 2 McLean County men are serving shorter sentences after judges reduced what could have been life sentences for crimes committed while they were teens. Byron Merriweather's 70-year term was cut in half in April by Judge Casey Costigan after testimony from the 35-year-old about changes he has made to his life since he fired the gun that killed a man in Miller Park in 2003. Meriwether will be back in court in June to ask Costigan to reconsider the 35-year sentence and instead allow him to serve a term closer to the 20-year minimum for murder. State law gives offenders like Meriwether a chance to apply for parole after 20 years, something Meriwether indicates he plans to pursue when he's eligible in 5 years. In its comments sending the Meriwether case back to McLean County for a new sentence, the 4th District Appellate Court noted the 2006 sentencing decision did not include a finding that Meriwether was that rare juvenile offender whose crime reflects irreparable corruption as required by state law. Adam Grist, a former state and federal prosecutor, argued twice that Brett Wilson, who was a teenager at the time charges were filed, should spend life in prison for sexually assaulting 3 children.
Brett Wilson had multiple victims of predatory criminal sexual assault, and the statute dictated that when you have multiple victims of that offense, you shall be sentenced to life in prison.
In 2015, the 4th District Appellate Court ordered a new sentencing for Wilson, citing a higher court ruling that barred mandatory life sentences for youthful offenders. Wilson was later sentenced to 45 years for predatory sexual assault. Grist is now a Bloomington defense lawyer. He says Illinois cases should not be affected by the Supreme Court case.
I don't think it will have any impact. The Illinois law is such that it's really already carved in a lot of the safeguards that were addressed in the recent United States Supreme Court decision.
Grist says the new ruling reflects the majority view of the Supreme Court that they want judges to be able to look individually and have the discretion to see what's appropriate for each defendant.
The people that want juveniles to be protected from judges' discretion would see it as a setback, but what the court, I think, really laid out is, no, they want judges to be able to look individually and have the discretion to see what's appropriate for each individual defendant.
Grist says juvenile sentencing is a very delicate aspect of a court's discretion in the United States.
You know, Justice Kavanaugh addresses that in his opinion and says there's lots of things the states can do to safeguard juveniles and sentencings, and many of them have done that. He kind of goes through a list.
In a strongly worded dissent to the majority ruling, Justice Sonia Sotomayor said the decision twists precedents in 2 previous Supreme Court rulings that require judges to decide if the irreparable corruption standard applies to the defendant. This story was reported by Edith Brady Lunny. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. A truck driver shortage is impacting the industry and the wider Illinois economy. Correspondent Steve Tarter talks with Thomas Nessler, coordinator of the truck driving training program at Illinois Valley Community College in Oglesby, Illinois.
If you're in the industry, you understand a little more. A lot of times the confusion starts with people getting into the industry. Obviously, you come in with no experience, and you'll see advertisements of $50,000 to $80,000 to start and all this. I'll be totally honest. Usually an entry-level driver, you're going to start lower. You got to get some experience. But the way things are now that the demand has increased with the economy, when the economy booms, you see all these trucks out on the interstate out there, they're not all running up down the road empty. If there's trucks out there loaded, moving, that the economy's booming. And right now that's the case. I mean, you could go out there to I-74 and truck traffic is just one after another out there, just like it is everywhere else. But a lot of drivers right now, the average age of a lot of drivers is probably the mid-50s. And you've had other people drop out of the business because of some of the, there's some regulations have started, and they're not bad regulations. It's things with following up with people with medical conditions possibly, and stuff on their driving records and that.
Thomas, how busy are you at the truck driving school? Are you loaded up?
We are currently swamped. I've got classes booked all the way to September right now. One thing is a little odd. I don't know if it's related to the pandemic, but I've been getting a lot of younger students, I mean, right out of high school, because you can get a CDL at age 18, but until you're 21, you cannot go out of state. And the only other restriction is you cannot haul hazardous materials, because that's a separate endorsement on your CDL. A lot of younger kids. Basically, our age range is from 18 to 65 years old.
You yourself were a trucker for a number of years, you mentioned. Is that job changing? or is it the same? Because, you know, we hear a lot about technology, and how has that gone in your time?
A lot of stuff with the trucks now, it's like the cars you see. There's a lot of technology in these trucks, computer systems. Some of these trucks have up to 18 computer systems in them. And if you get, say, a sensor somewhere in one system and then it triggers another, then you'll get a warning light on your dashboard. There's so much stuff on there now. There's things like they call like adaptive cruise. Adaptive cruise control is like a driver sets his cruise at, say, 65. And then a sensor in the front of the truck will sense him coming up on a vehicle in front of him. When he gets a little too close, it automatically starts slowing the truck down. Things like lane departure sensors, where like if you get a little close to the white line on your right side or left side, it starts to beep in the cab, you'll hear it. A lot of this stuff's been around now for 5 to 10 years, and they're adding more and more. And you got to remember too, when you got a lot of old school drivers out there yet, you know, guys 60, 62, 63 years old, they started when there was none of this stuff. And you start changing a lot of that stuff. A lot of older drivers like, Jesus, it's trying to tell me how to drive this truck. I've driven 3 million miles and I know how to do it. And I know that's not the right way to look at it. They're trying to improve safety and everything too. But sometimes it's hard to accept for some drivers, especially older people.
That was Thomas Nessler of Illinois Valley Community College speaking with Steve Tarter. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.